Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux for the Rest of Us, episode 185. This is a show about all things Linux, whether it be hardware, software, whatever tickles our Linux fancy. I am Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, and I am here with my good friend, the door-to-door geek, a.k.a. Stephen McLaughlin, a.k.a. the Linux Maven. How's it going, Dor?
Hey, Cody. Going good. I want to say all things considered, but I feel like I say that every single time kind of thing. So I'm going to say it's going good. Time is progressing at a normal standard rate that I've come to expect.
Well, good. Good. Glad to hear it. You surviving the heat okay then, I assume?
No, I'm fat, so it doesn't work out well, especially when I got to cut my grass. I literally feel like I'm 5 minutes away from telling my wife, call an ambulance!
Right. Yeah, I have a much worse situation, but yeah, I feel you. Yeah, it's definitely getting warm around here, and doing whatever I can to stay cool. If there was only an ice machine around.
That would help, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe I'll go to my local hotel and just flash a badge. Like, I'm here to inspect. Just move along.
Yeah, nothing to see here.
All right. Well, right off the bat, we want to thank everyone for signing up who has already signed up for the Linux for the Rest of Us Club. We have seen a little bit of a surge in membership the past 45, 60 days, so thank you for everyone who did sign up. There is some exclusive content coming for you soon, as well as just by being a member of the club, you automatically get entered into any giveaway that we have here on the show, and it doesn't cost anything whatsoever. This is just a great way to have the hardcore of the hardcore get some little bonuses here and there. And like I said, be available for those giveaways for nothing. So if you haven't already, please head over to podnos.com/Linux for the Rest of Us Club and sign up for absolutely free, and you'll get those notifications when they start coming through again.
And you're guaranteed no spam ever. I will say, if you would like to see things come through the newsletter, the quote-unquote barrier of entry to initiate a communications with a network called Podnuts or myself is extremely easy to get past. Just send me an email or a Google Plus Hangout or a Google Plus or a tweet or Facebook or whatever, and just say what you would like to see or hear, and do everything in my power to make that happen.
You got that right. Yeah, we obviously do this to have fun for ourselves. We love interacting with you, the audience, and anything that you crave as far as content, we will do our best to accommodate. And what a better way to communicate with us than directly.
Yes, and we have electrolytes. Of course, that's what everyone craves.
Well, not only what everybody, but plants as well.
Sorry. Most importantly.
Yes, plants. Very cool. All right. Well, also, if you are in the mood or in the market or both, to purchase either a new PC, a new laptop, or maybe just some general computer hardware, please head over to thinkpenguin.com. They are a company that makes open source friendly hardware and different packages. They even have an open source router based off of a TP-Link, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right, Dor?
Most of their routers are based off TP-Link because TP-Link is the most open about the internals and the software that's running on it.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you're in the market for any sort of machine, please head over there. If you find one that you like, send us an email directly to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com, and we will send you a free coupon code that you can use there to save a little bit of money. And we like supporting them because they support the community by giving us extra open options through normal by us taking advantage of their hardware through our normal everyday computer use, whether it be a full desktop, like a mini desktop, laptop, or the hardware solutions that they provide in the terms of networking equipment as well. So definitely check them out. They're a great company.
Absolutely. And I will say, one of the perks that I've heard another company mention, that they, quote unquote, modify the BIOS of the hardware to get better performance. I'm not positive, but I'm 99.999% sure they are misspeaking. They do not modify the BIOS. They take the modifications that the guys at Think Penguin offer back to everyone, and they use those modifications on their Linux hardware. I've met Think Penguin guys a couple times at shows, at conferences. I've met the other guys from every other dedicated Linux distributor at conferences. I'd be shocked if the people at the other conferences were able to even install Linux. Where the Penguin guys, I think, if needed, could help design a spacecraft. It's painfully clear the brains of the operations in ThinkPenguin come out to the show. Unbelievably smart guys, unbelievably friendly, unbelievably helpful, and for freedom. They are definitely a pro-freedom organization, which is why I try to support them as much as they support the entire world.
And they're also a good group of guys. I met a couple of them at Northwest Linux Fest, and they were very approachable, very nice, had some good information. And yeah, considering that they were from a hardware vendor, I didn't really have any negative experience at all with anybody at Northwest Linux Fest, but ditto. Those guys in particular were very nice. And with one of them in particular, the guy that was doing all the BIOS work, you could tell that he was just on another level, but he was still able to somewhat, and why I shouldn't say someone, he was still able to communicate effectively.
Oh yeah.
Compared to him, I'm like a sub layman, but he was still very nice and approachable and able to explain, you know, the intricacies of what he does in such a manner to where even I can understand it. So.
You're nice. To him, I'm a Neanderthal. I'm barely not out of the cage. This guy really is smart, but most importantly, what I think I noticed, he's been doing this for every bit of, I want to say, 5 years now that I know of. He's probably been doing it for longer than that. He's had multiple job offers, I know, from other people for big companies to come in and do work like Intel. And he says, no, I don't think so. I don't like your I don't like your way of doing business. Talking to him, the most clear thing is he's passionate. And to be honest, it shows in the quality of products. Every time I go to shows, I'm really shocked that they leave with anything in their case because they just sell good stuff. Not crazy cheap prices, fair prices, but it's definitely quality content.
Definitely. All right. So moving right along. Of course, I got to mention it. Every time these guys come up with some sort of new package, I got to put it out there in the community because it's just worthwhile. Humble Bundle released a new bundle, the Humble Game Making Bundle. Now, we've all had our, well, I should say most people have thought, man, I would love to write a book. Or I would love to, you know, get that collection of poems going. Or I'd love to write I'd love to write that screenplay. I'd love to make that film. Or I'd love to make that game. We all have these creative urges in us. But more often than not, what I see happen is one of two things. One, you surround yourself with all the tools necessary to embark upon this creative endeavor, and then you don't do it. Or number two, you think you need those tools to embark on that creative endeavor, but then you don't amass the tools and you don't do it. So what if, let's say, for less than, I don't know, 3 cups of coffee, you could arm yourself with a lot of tools to potentially make your own video game? That's exactly what this can do. This game making bundle, in a Humble Bundle, you know, they have the different tiers. They have, you know, if you pay, you pay any amount you want, you get, you know, this much. If you pay just a little bit more than the average, you get this much. If you pay X amount to unlock, you get everything. So with this, they have a game dev starter pack. They have a Stencil, which is an indie magazine on game making, RPG Maker, Humble Bundle Starter DLC Pack, Indie Game Maker Contest 14 Finalist Pack, Labyrinth Dreams, and a slew of other tools. So basically, if you pay the most amount, the highest amount that you can for this bundle, which is $12, you get 20 pieces of content. So some of them are tools, some of them are creative instructions on how to go about making games, some are just content. But for less than $1 each, and the fact that when you actually go to pay for this through Humble Bundle, you could forego giving these developers any money whatsoever, and you could give all the money, every single cent, to either Child's Play, which is a charity that puts games into the hands of children in children's hospitals, or Extra Life, which is also partnered with the Children's Miracle Network. The fact that you can choose to give all of that money to either of those organizations is fantastic, and you'll be giving yourself a large number of tools to potentially make not only your first, but maybe the first of many of your own video games. So if you've ever had that inkling, I would urge you to go to humblebundle.com right now. I believe it's for the next 10, 13 days, so all the way through the perhaps the 20th of July of this year, that you can take advantage of this bundle. And if you're interested in that whatsoever, definitely check it out. And the reason we bring it up on this show is that some of the items involve, not all of them are Linux friendly, I will say. However, the five or six pieces that are in that you basically unlock by buying the $12 package are all Linux compatible. So even if you don't dual boot whatsoever, which I don't, you are still able to access all five of those through Linux natively. The rest of them you could probably do through Wine.
Well, in the extra five, I only see two of them positively for Linux. Spirit Lamp and Goats on a Bridge, I believe, are two of them that say they will be available for Linux, but they're not right now available for Linux. And then the Humble Bundle Fantasy DLC pack, I believe you can access with Linux. But I will say, you were quoting me earlier, I was wrong. Stencil Inside Edition, which sounds like a magazine, I thought was a magazine, is not, in fact, a magazine. It is a non-coding building block style game development engine. So this would be good for, quote-unquote, youngsters or children, or if you have a accent, maybe chitlin kind of thing. Humble has upset me in the past, primarily because whenever they post something publicly to a social media site, and I immediately directly respond to them with how much of this is Linux compatible, is it Linux compatible question, I don't even get an acknowledgement back anymore. And a huge percentage of their stuff is not Linux compatible. This is the kind of thing I highly encourage you, if you're young, number one, buy these, and you need to experiment. You need to play around. You never know where you're going to find something that really does capture your imagination, dare I say, to where you can actually make stuff. There's no greater satisfaction than creation and completion of creation. Why, yes, completing a game feels really good, but creating a game to completion feels even better. I'm buying this. Even though I'm a Linux household, I know I'm going to have to at least have my children experience Windows. I can't let them out the door and without them experiencing Windows whatsoever, because then when they go into the real world, they're going to be lost, because not every place he goes is going to run Linux, period. I equate it with having a person in my house, bringing them up on Human Trait and Earth, and not ever showing them Asian people. Kind of thing. They're out there, okay? Let's just acknowledge that everything is out there before our children leave our house, and make sure they get some time at least experiencing what those other things are.
So just to be clear, you're comparing Microsoft Windows to Asian people.
There's just as many of each other out there, maybe. I don't know. but thank you. Thank you for allowing me to dig that hole, Cody.
I just
a gentleman and a scholar.
I just wanted to be clear for the fans. That's it.
Well, you did a good job of it.
If nothing else, I'm a magnifying glass for the words that you put out on the internet. You're welcome.
Here's the difference. I'm never going to do any maintenance on any Windows computer in my house, ever. I don't care. If they have a Windows computer, which they will, they are going to be responsible for it, or they're going to let it die, and then I'll take it and make it a Linux box. But I want to give my children the option to do something constructive on a computer and not just craft pixelated block crap in a Microsoft now owned product called Minecraft. So I'm going to buy this, period. Going to buy it. And the real driving factor was they have a thing called Goats on a Bridge, and that might have just pushed me over the edge.
Yep, it sounds good.
Yeah, goats. How can you go wrong?
Only one way to find out. Well, you know, you say that, but then I will say that as of this point in time, goats have not let me down. So we'll just hope that keeps up.
Well, before we go on, I'll say anyone of Asian, whatever you want to call yourself, Asian, Oriental, Chinese, Japanese, Laotian, Korean, Vietnamese, anything, if I've upset you,
put the shovel down.
You're welcome. Join the rest of the world, because I've upset everybody at least once.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, as much as I don't want to, moving right along, Microsoft joins the Linux Foundation. What year is this?
Thank you. The first thing I got to say is there was a shirt. There was a saying. Okay, it was a saying by Linus Torvalds that I completely forgot about. And on my social streams and feeds, I saw a shirt, and I totally forgot about it. And Linus said, I know I'm going to get this wrong, so I'm sorry to all the hardcores out there. Linus said, first they will ignore us, then they will laugh at us, then they will attack us, and then we will win. Okay, we've seen it all. We've seen ignoring. They've seen us laugh and call us a virus. They've seen us attack us and say that we're weak and we're horrible for infrastructure, horrible for security. And now, at least not directly, Microsoft has joined the RR Consortium, which includes, but not limited to, Google, HP, Oracle, Microsoft, and a bunch of other companies. And they're giving money. Okay, now first off, real quick, anytime you join the Linux Foundation, it has a membership quote-unquote fee. Depending on the level, depends on how much money they give.
Is it bronze, silver, gold, like platinum? Is that right?
I do believe that is the actual names of them. And of course, platinum is literally something like $500,000 a year. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is not chum change. Also, the money you give gives you no rights, no permissions, or no power over anything that directly happens in the kernel. Okay. This was not Microsoft buying their way into manipulating Linux. It wasn't them getting into modify the kernel, because they've already modified the kernel. Anybody can modify the kernel. You give code. People look at the code. If they like the code, they put the code in. Microsoft has already done that, okay? This is Microsoft formally being on board, having a, I don't want to say a voting voice, because that's not really it. They're now part of a group that meets occasionally to discuss long-term things that's going to happen in Linux. And these are completely in the open, by the way. They just can help drive the conversation with everyone else. This is Microsoft sneaking into the pit stop of Linux just to see how things are done, see how people talk, see how people react. I'm guaranteeing you right now they're to learn something and they're to maybe influence other companies, but they're not going to influence Linux directly. That's the whole thing. Okay. Now, what I ask is for the listeners out there, if you've listened to any podcast with smart people, with intelligent people on it that actually discuss what this R Consortium is, by that, I don't mean give me Hank and Chainsaw. You know, one of them works at Wendy's during the day and the other one, shovels the streets at night, but they get together to talk about stuff and they talked about this. I want actual intelligent people who are professionals in the computing industry to talk about what this R Consortium means. Because I can read what it says that they're doing, but I want to know what other smart people think that this R Consortium is actually, what is its long-term goal? Because it's a little bit confusing to me. Anytime you see Microsoft and Oracle and HP and Google all in the same room, it kind of, worries me a little bit.
The game is afoot.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, no. I just know it's something that could be very big and important. And I did put a couple extra links in the notes. One was to the LinuxFoundation.org with the official announcement, mm-hmm, of the R Consortium. And then we have a other link in there at Linux Vita. Both of them talked very openly about what the consortium means. I want to hear some independent people, their opinion on it, because this is very interesting to me. Their gold member, the other vendor in with that group, which kind of got me, was R Studio. R Studio makes some very high-end forensic grade software. So this is a broad spectrum of people. Microsoft is a platinum member.
So wow.
They gave the most money possible, which to them is still nothing.
Chump change.
It's like toilet money.
Kind of. That's their, that's a couple months worth of their SD card format licensing fees, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or money to get from Android.
Right. Yeah.
And here's the only thing I want to just say. This is like another one of those things where we have to look at it and we have to decide what we're going to get out of it, how we're going to look at this kind of thing. Because to a degree, perception is reality, and how we communicate our perception does influence other people. This is Microsoft voluntarily paying a quote-unquote Linux tax. Okay, this is not Linux going to Best Buy and buying Windows computers to get things done, involuntary, almost paying a Microsoft tax. Because let me tell you something. Linux don't give Microsoft any money directly, period. Maybe they buy Android devices. Maybe they buy other devices that push money back to Microsoft. But no way, shape, or form is the Linux Foundation giving Microsoft money. Microsoft is voluntarily giving Linux money. That is I call it KPI, key performance indicator, that the tide is indeed shifting slowly, very slowly, but it is shifting.
Well, like I said in the past, and I've been labeled a Microsoft and a Windows hater before, and that's just not the case. However, when it comes to products that you do or don't like or do or don't want to support, consider, the age-old vote with your wallet, but also think about voting with your time. Because if you think of time as money, as you should, the time that you're devoting to certain things in your life, whether it be using an operating system that you don't like or spending too much time doing an extracurricular activity, you can save more time by just simply kind of reevaluating what you want in your life. But in particular, and I've said this, for the past year or so, I do like some of the changes that they're making as a company. Now, has those changes or my opinions of those changes caused me to go out and get a Windows phone or be really excited about Windows 10, the tech preview or the full license? No, but I'm looking at what they're, because if you took away their legacy and what they are, if they were just some large company that all of a sudden was supporting Linux in this way, you would think, that's great. We can use that money in a positive way. But I think that too many people think they're up to something. You know, they've been burned one way or another by this company in the past, and they're skeptical. And to those people, I say, by all means, continue to be skeptical, but maybe peel it back just a little bit and look to see what we can gain from them as much as what they can gain from us in these particular strategic moves that they're making. And let's just cross our fingers and hope for the best.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say as of late, to me, they are a very interesting company, using a very Nightwise-ish term that's a non-preferential or downing statement. It's just a statement of they're interesting. As they're good for, to me, for technical entertainment, because they are the worst marketed company maybe ever.
I think that's HP.
I don't know, man. Microsoft ad campaigns are some of the worst things I've ever seen in my life. They continuously, repetitively, like a disease, every other release of Windows mess it up somehow. Maybe not mess it up, but they definitely mess stuff up about it. Continuously, every other version, over and over and over again. This Windows 10 is going to be an interesting, quote-unquote, distribution release for Windows, because they say it's going to be their last one, which of course we know is a lie. It's going to be the last named one, because Service Pack 1 is, if Windows 10 is a 3-gig download, Windows 10 Service Pack 1 will be a 3-gig download. Windows 2017 edition will be 3-gig download. They're just going to stop naming them. And they're not going to make a huge torrential shift until they move away from .NET and PowerShell. Then they'll do another monumental shift, but not till then. They like using both of those technologies right now a whole lot. But the only constant in any technology is change. In Linux, the last 6 years, I've seen monumental change in desktop styles, file manager, selling points, if you will, distribution goals. I've seen distributions come, distributions go. I've seen games come out of nowhere on Linux. I've seen text editors take big shifts from being the Emacs and Vim only arena to actually having some visual editors out there. So the only constant is change, and Microsoft is also changing. We'll have to see what they change into is the question.
Yes. Yeah. And we'll just have to kind of wait and see. But in the meantime, if, especially the Linux Foundation, if they can benefit from having them as a member and that money that they're giving toward it, then I say more power to them.
Oh, yes. And also, before we forget, let's stop this podcast abruptly and completely break the flow of anything to remind everyone that this show is brought to you by, it's brought to you by the listeners. Thanks everyone for their support. Thanks to everyone who goes to podness.com/eBay or podness.com/Amazon or just goes and does straight donations or just tweets about us, whatever. Thank you, everybody.
And a big thank you from me as well. The little money that we get as bonuses from you and the purchases that you're already making. So for the money that we get as a network, just by having you take that one extra step once or twice over a few months to click that link and then make those purchases, it really does help because we do have costs involved with this. All of our content is free. And the money that we do get from that does go a long way to help us maintaining websites. So for instance, Door has spoken, I believe, on at least two or three different shows on the network about the changes of podness.com and how that's going. I can say I've seen some previews of some new graphics for a lot of the shows, and they're awesome. That is going to be possible also because of your kind donations and your following our affiliate links. So from the bottom of my heart as well, thank you.
Well, the graphics are all a gift. Richard is the man. I salute him. And they're gold. I will say that.
They're very good.
But yeah, we're just all moving forward. And trust me, if none of those things did work, we probably would have ads on this show because we need to pay for the website. I need to try to make sure host of the show get better hardware when money permits. I got to try to promote when I can. I have to try to get t-shirts and stuff. I have to try to, when I go to conferences, be able to give stuff away when I can. I have to try to promote the network, and it's because of people like you that let me do it. Now, I found this link, Cody. I literally said to myself, this is ultra cool. And then I thought to myself, I don't want to monitor my own network, so I'm not going to do this. But my networking buddies that aren't necessarily Linux people, I showed them this link over here at Make Use Of, Turn Your Raspberry Pi into a Network Monitoring Tool. Two of them immediately went out and bought Pi because they're familiar with tools like Nagios. Nagios is one of those unbelievable switchblade / Swiss Army knives / sporks of tools that really can allow you to get deep into your network, learn a lot of different stuff, learn what's going on, what's going right, what's going wrong, and to be able to do it from a $35 computer, just hooking it up to your network is pretty awesome.
Now, I do warn some of you, by all means, buy these, use them in your day-to-day, but maybe don't let your boss know that you're getting all this done with a $35 machine.
Well, number one, do not put it on your work network.
Right.
Explicit written permission.
Written consent, yes.
Because you will, if your network is at all competent,
you'll be in jail.
Yeah, connecting this to your network will cause alarms to go off.
Right.
And people to get up from their desk and start running around the office because Nagios is a dangerous tool because it's basically, it helps with vulnerability testing. Mm-hmm. So it literally scans entire subnets, sucks in all the information it can out of each thing that it can activate on the network, ping on the network, or even see that there's any light to it. So it's a dangerous tool to have, but it's the kind of thing that knowing Nagios is a easy way to guarantee future income for yourself in the security field. And is a really, putting on a Raspberry Pi is a super easy way to introduce yourself to the types of things that can be done with Nagios if you've never seen it before. And if you do know Nagios, this is a fantastic pull out of your pocket, slap it on a customer's network that you're working for and get some quick results back without having to lug around full laptop, full desktop, switches, and a whole bunch of other stuff. You just carry around your Pi.
Very, very good.
Yeah, I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, the things we're going to be able to do with those little computers are going to be huge, and groundbreaking as we find more and more uses for them. So fantastic find there, Dor.
And also one of their paragraph headers is perfectly entitled, which is the Rabbit Hole of Nagios. This is the kind of tool that once you get into, you're not going to get out unless you literally forcibly take yourself out of that arena. Because once you get into Nagios and then you learn about Kali Linux and everything else, you're not going to have a lot of free time on your hands.
So would you say it's akin to the rabbit hole?
Right.
Okay, then. Oh. So tell me about iOS and well, we got to be careful.
Thank you.
Tell me about EYEOS.
Okay.
Because I know that your iOS knowledge is limited to the iPhone 4 that you have on your desk.
Yeah, but it doesn't even power on, so I don't know anything about it.
Okay.
I saw this, and it literally like tickled the back of my mind from like 5 years ago or 7 years ago or something. Okay, right after the Web 2.0 thing, we started seeing a lot more interactive web pages. Then we started seeing the internet home pages. Like you had the Google home page that you could customize. Yahoo had their own custom home page kind of thing where you could customize it and add widgets and stuff onto it. iOS, EYEOS, was the next revving of that. This is a full-ish featured desktop completely in your browser, okay? You can now, because I don't think it was always open and available for download and everything, not that I know of, but now you can download it, install it on Ubuntu Linux 15.04, which that is the proof in the pudding that this is a test. This is a beta. This is not a production ready thing because 15.04 is not a production distribution release of Ubuntu. You need a Apache PHP MySQL. You cannot get any more simple than that is what I will say. That is the basis for all modern interactive websites. And then you go through basically an installation wizard, which is just accessing a web page to go through your first time setup of the iOS environment. And then after that, you literally get a login page on a web page that after you log in, you have what equates to a web desktop. To me, this is just really cool. I hope that this catches at least some momentum and people try to enhance it more, because I can see having stuff like integration with OwnCloud as the file server on the back end, integration with gallery type things, integration with media type content, to where this type of thing could eventually end up being the front end to a completely free distributed social sharing platform kind of thing. Because this is the kind of polish you need on that interface for this kind of thing to take off. It isn't perfect. It's not a full-featured desktop, but it is a very interesting web interface that acts like a desktop.
Okay. Yeah. I will say right now I don't have a use for this, but I may in the future, so it's still a good find.
Well, that's the thing. Very, very few people actually have a use for this. It's the kind of thing that if you want to blow away your installation, install 15.04, install this and play with it just to see what kind of thing is possible. But I doubt if anyone would keep this any length of time unless they had a super niche need of this film.
Okay, very good. So let's see here. Oh, here we go. Another mini PC, which is your addiction. Please tell me all about it.
Well, I had to bring this one because this is a rev. Martin Rambo Bando, Potify.com/Geeksters. If you do not know who he is, I really do feel sorry for you. He bought what I want to say is like the previous version of this device. Okay. This is a, I'm trying to get a good form factor feel for this. This is like a unfolded mail wallet in length and width. In depth, it's a little bit thicker than the thin side of a USB socket. Okay, it's not big. For $134, you get a model with a 64 gigabyte SD in it with a, 16 gig host OS system on it, 2 gigs of RAM, quad core processor, 802.11 BGN, Bluetooth 4.0, HDMI, and it says Ethernet. This is the big differentiator. Most of them do not have Ethernet. Now, it does seem like it only has 10/100 Ethernet, but it's Ethernet. Most of them only have Wi-Fi. This also has a battery in, I believe, the lower end. The lower end does not have the 64 gigabyte SD, SSD. It only has 32 gigabyte, which is only $124. But if you need a small form factor computer, now here to me is the ultimate kicker. This is not a desktop replacement computer, even though it can be. What this really is X in my life, whether it be wife, kid, parent, sister, brother, their computer just died. We need something right now. Okay. This is a great, let's give them this. It will last a year or maybe two, and it will give them a full featured computing experience with super minimal hardware. Also, in my opinion, because it's an SSD, because it's so small, it's much less for them to break. You can literally hide this behind the monitor. The likelihood of them spilling anything on it is super low. You can dual boot these to Linux or leave it installed with the default Windows 8 on it. Here's the real reason why I almost approve of these devices. These devices basically go against the Windows policy because they don't pay the Windows tax. If you're so under a device rating, you don't have to pay the Windows tax. They started that with Windows RT with small screen devices. Then they did it with full Windows.8 for small screen devices. These devices do not pay the Microsoft tax. So that's the one reason why I kind of do like these things. And they're just really small. They're really affordable compared to anything else. Yes, you could get a laptop, but with a laptop, to be quite honest, you have the one and only keyboard you can use. You can't use anything else. Laptops don't come with mice. To use a mouse with the laptop is kind of like, you know, clipping something to your suspenders adjunct. The screen in the laptop is the screen in the laptop is the screen in the laptop, and that's it. With this, you can have your own monitor however you want, your own keyboard how you want, your own mouse how you want, and just change that back end thing. And I completely forgot to mention the name of this one. This one is called VOYO V2 Mini PC. This is over at Lil Putin, which is one of those sites I just can't stop going to.
It's dangerous, them and Make Use Of and several others where it's just, speaking of rabbit holes earlier, man, where did my free time go, right?
Yeah, the actual dimensions for this are 131 millimeters by 82 millimeters by 15 millimeters. You could literally pack, you know, probably 30 of these things in a shoebox and still have room to spare.
Jeez.
Yeah, and I will say, if you want to know a hands-on review of this style of device, Martin Rambo Bando did buy two of them. He also has an Intel Compute Stick. And what I gather is the processor, the wireless, the Bluetooth, and the RAM for all these devices, all these small mini desktops, the Intel Compute Stick, all of them basically have the same processors, RAM, Bluetooth, and Wi-Fi. So a lot of the performance is the same across all of them. And I'll say in my personal experience, it's really good because I have a dual boot Android Windows tablet with basically the same specs in it. And it performs far, far greater than I ever expected it to. Who knew Windows could be installed on a tablet and use less than, I think it is 8 gigs, I think 6 gigs, and actually perform moderately well with 2 gigs of RAM.
Interesting. Yeah, but the Compute Stick, there were some potential pros and cons, so I didn't end up buying it. And the fact that it's first-gen hardware, I figured, let someone else take the risk. And that other person was Martin Rambo Obando.
And he jumped in with both feet.
Oh, yeah. All 7'9" of him.
Exactly.
Him and his blue ox. All right, very good. So, let's see. Tell me what's happening with the Red Hat CEO.
They just had a big conference, actually, over at Datamation. I saw the name of the person. I can't remember who it was. It did this. Oh, Shawn Michael Kerner. Three names, which means he could be a serial killer one day. Covered this, spoke one-on-one with the Red Hat CEO. Okay. First off, I got to say this. I almost cackle incessantly when I listen to a podcast of any kind and I hear someone insult Red Hat, mocking their quote unquote success, like look where they're at now kind of thing, laughingly. It just, it, to me, that's a good yardstick to just show how incompetent and how ignorant some people are, because Red Hat is now a $1+ billion a year company, phenomenal success. They're a great stock to have gotten into. They are literally annihilating server rooms around the world, are completely switching over to Red Hat. And it's partially because of their principles, but it's mainly because of their support. They don't sell you a product. They sell you with the support. So if the support sucks, you won't buy their product again. Other products, you buy the product, and it just so happens their support sucks because you're not buying the support. He gave a quick little mini interview. It's only like 2 minutes long, where he talks about the difference in management style that he has to do. And he talks about how his management style there, he sees spreading because he's had so much success with it, with over 8,000 in employees in 60 countries. Okay. You have to have a different management style. Every company is outsourcing and pulling in contractors, it seems like, whenever possible. If other companies can grasp how to hire people remotely and actually get your money's worth out of them, they're going to be the ones who are successful companies. So if you are a manager or you're getting into management, I ask you to pay attention to what this guy says. Check out that link on Datamation. It's only two and a half minutes long. But good CEOs, when they say something, they don't need a lot of time to say something. They say something that's very important in a very short amount of time. So I encourage people to listen to it. And if I wasn't afraid of getting taken down, I would have played the video here. But, you know, I don't like getting takedown notices.
That, and you have no adventurous spirit whatsoever.
Yeah, I'm married.
Touche. Okay. But yeah, that video does sound interesting. I will definitely check it out soon.
Yeah, and this next one is basically like piggybacking on that same kind of thing. Now, these guys are a little bit of zealots, but then again, their website is ZDNet. The article is entitled, New Workloads Are Going to Enterprise Technologies with Open Source at the Core. Okay, it is open source tech becomes king makers in enterprise. Okay. Cody, I heavily implore you to pipe in on your corporate experience with this, but what I tend to see is every place, as soon as somebody gets hired, the first thing they try to do is show that they're an impact player. They want to make sure, and as quick as a time frame as possible, everyone immediately around that new person understands exactly why it was the right decision to hire that new person. It's like win fast, fail faster kind of mentality, almost, to where they will go at breakneck speeds to prove their value, their worth, and try to show something key that they can do.
I can speak to that. That is more often than not the case. And in a couple different companies I've worked for, I've seen that happen. But I would say that a significant number of those people get those initial amazing results in a less than integrity conscious way.
Yeah.
And then they end up getting exposed for it, and then they're gone.
Yes. And yeah, what I was going to say was, it's almost like baseball in the sense of only one out of three times the people doing this actually get a good solid hit to where they actually succeed. And only like one out of 10 of them actually hit like a home run. Okay.
Yes.
But I will say, a great way to be an impact player is basically bringing in knowledge that the enterprise is unaware of. Okay. Because rarely will you understand that company's business more than they already do, because they've been doing it for a while, at least some of them, guaranteed. but to actually bring in knowledge that they're totally unaware of is how you can become a successful impact player. And open source is more and more becoming their bat when they come in for that hit. And it's because so many enterprises didn't take the time to learn anything about open source in the past. Now, those people are slowly getting weeded out of enterprises because they're falling behind. There's no doubt in my mind, companies like Red Hat supply you with enterprise stacks, is what I call it. I'm not sure that that's what they call it, but it's complete solutions from the bottom to the top to give you areas to put what you want in them. They don't offer you programs or applications or solutions, you know, direct applications that are solutions. They offer you platforms that allow you to make your own solution. And it's because there's only one constant, permanent, absolute, 100% fact in software. You will never buy a piece of software that meets your business need 100% completely, and that's the only thing it does. One of two things will happen. You buy a piece of software and you have to change your business flows, your workflows, your daily procedures to match that software, or the software will do a billion more things than you need it to do, and it does 100% of your needs, which means you're going to overpay. And the last thing that happens is only with the big boys. You buy a piece of software, then you pay that company to come in and customize that software to meet your needs. Instead of spending all that money, instead of getting all that overhang in the application of the extra functions, or instead of having to modify how your company is doing things, you bring in a company like Red Hat that enables you to build solutions and bring in custom open source solutions that completely, perfectly match your business. That's how you can cause an immediate impact and a quote-unquote changing of the guards in a enterprise environment.
But the main argument to that is that my brother-in-law, who's the computer guy in my family, said I should go with Company A instead of Red Hat because he's never heard of Red Hat.
Yeah,
and my brother-in-law makes a good barbecued hamburger, so I trust him.
Right, and he's the guy that showed you the trick where you take the beer bottle and tap it on top of the other beer bottle, and that's kind of cool.
Right. Because when it all comes down to it, reputations do precede themselves. And with the FUD that certain corporations put out there as far as the cost of retraining and changing the way you do things, there are a lot of potential hoops to jump through to get large organizations to change the software solutions that they're using. I can speak from that firsthand experience. I keep seeing different iterations of the same software where I work being used. It's becoming more functional, but you just have to wonder for someone who works for a big corporation if the real information was put out there to them and said solution A costs this much, solution B costs this much, and here's the pros and cons. Why wouldn't they pick solution B every single time? Because it's a fraction.
Wow.
I mean, a significant fraction.
Easy.
And they're not locked into that. They can go to something else later. Whereas you get solution A most of the time, you're stuck.
I'll tell you, there's an easy answer for it. And that's because a salesman told them solution A was better. I'm guessing.
Of course. Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Put it in the hands of the people who are actually cutting checks for this stuff.
Well,
because then it just doesn't add up.
Yeah, and I will say one thing that I really do hope to see is open structured companies like Red Hat becoming popular with employees, i.e. when people go look for a job, they'd rather work for a company that is more open and not just, well, this other company pays me more money. Because the same kind of thing applies with when you go get a job for a company that's closed and proprietary and swindling. Yes, you'll get quick turnaround with money, but you might not be happy in 6 months.
Right.
Completely U-turning now, Cody. Opensource.com, which is sponsored by Red Hat. I will say that again. Every time I say that website, I will, because that's one of those things. It's like if open source was giving me money, I would have to say, you know, I'm sponsored by opensource.com and I'm talking about this, but I do it the other way around. I want to keep letting people know this is a Red Hat website. But here's a great posting. Al Swigart is what I'm going to say. Six time consuming tasks you can automate with code. Okay. Everybody knows. Well, God, let me rephrase that. I hope everybody knows a computer is nothing if it's not a system that's designed to do repeatable tasks. Whether that repeatable task is constantly opening up Facebook or whether it's playing this same game, you know, over and over again after you install it. That's what computers are really meant for, repeatable tasks. And if you know a little bit of code or a macro language or an application, you can automate a insane percentage of things you do on any desktop. This article basically just gives you a very broad spectrum of kind of thing. This article is really meant to allow those people who don't know about automation on computers. Here are some general ideas of what you can do. Hopefully, if you read this, you'll actually say, yeah, I do that. How can I automate that? Because you shouldn't have to sit down for any length of time and do the same thing over and over again, day after day after day. I automated, I can tell you, everything I had to do more than once in every job title I've had for the last 15 years. And I think that's part of the reason why I've gotten better jobs over time is because they see other people running around like crazy getting stuff done. And I'm sitting there. I used to watch YouTube videos on database design. And then when someone said they need something done, I just move my mouse over, click a button, then I'll go back to watching my video because I had everything automated. Some of their examples, gathering data, formatting data. A great tool for this is Notepad++. When you want to format large batches of data. I'm not going to tell you how to do it. It has a built-in macro recorder and playback. It can allow you to format all kinds of data. Batches of instructions, whether it's tab keys or mouse clicks or copy commands or move commands, whatever, anything you can basically do in Linux especially, can be described in a batch file with simple text characters. Their other stuff is like mass file operations, like blanketly renaming files or converting files or backing up files or deleting files. Automated checking. You can basically check file integrity kind of things on a lot of stuff. That one requires a little bit more research and expertise. Notification. You can basically turn your automated task into a notification routine. Like every time somebody adds a file to this Dropbox thing that we share, I get an email. Or every time I have a power outage, when my computer comes back up, send me an email. There's all kinds of things.
See, that's just awesome. I mean, and I think that, and you've spoken about automation for years, back when, the first 20, 25 episodes of this show, you spoke about and your 9-to-5, the way that you use a lot of keyboard shortcuts, for instance, to send emails to your boss, letting him know that you're there, combining multiple tasks into just keystrokes, or being able to automate certain things as well. And if I think that a lot of people, and I speak from personal experience too, you look at something like this and you think that would be great, but man, it's got to be hard to set up, right? It probably isn't as hard. But also, it's not as hard as doing that same task manually every time you need to do it from now until you don't. So consider investing the time in something like this to take that task sort of off of your mental plate every day, and you'll be amazed at what you can accomplish.
Yeah, there's certain things, hypothetically, mass formatting of data. There were times where if I had to do that line by line, it would have taken me 6 hours to do. But because of Notepad++ and other macro-enabled kind of things, I was able to get it set up and done in 10 minutes. Some of the more intricate automation things do require probably more time to set up than to actually do. But when you have, but then you have to do it again, there's no extra time spent. You just click a button and it's done. Here's like the one kind of thing I'll throw out there. On Windows Server products, there's a command that is maybe one of the most underused commands on Windows. And this went back to, I think, even Server 2003. It was a command called for files, F-O-R-F-I-L-E-S. An actual elegant command that you could, like, I put into a scheduled task to run every X hours, like once a day. And it would basically grep a directory, get every file, because of the command structure layout, every file that was older than a certain date, and move it to this other folder. And then I had a second scheduled task that after, run a for files now command on this folder, and when files got over this date, move them to a network, a attached storage. And then on that server, once the files got X age, delete them, because we needed to keep local files for at least a day or two, but they would build up really fast and they would take up disk space. They would threaten to fill up the hard drive. So we would first move them to a secondary drive on the same computer. And then we sometimes had to go back in those log files and look at stuff. So I said, well, let's keep about 2 weeks of stuff on this second drive. And then we knew if it was something that happened in the last day, it would be on this drive. If it was older than a day, it would be on the second drive. If it was older than like 2 weeks, it would be back on the NAS. And then if it was over a year, the file didn't exist anymore. And it was super easy to set that kind of thing up. And what you gain out of doing this kind of automation, some people say it's complex, it's a one-off, it's a hack. Those are the people that don't know what the hell they're doing. And I'm sorry if you're one of those people. Doing solutions like this guarantee complete flexibility, zero maintenance, because nothing is going to die. Windows is never going to get rid of that for files command, period, because they can't. They're not going to change how the thing works because they don't. And you don't have to worry about upgrades. You don't have to worry about buying a new version. You don't have to worry about something expiring. It's guaranteed longevity. Things like this that I've written have been running in my enterprise for 15 years without me touching them. Doing things like this is, to me, such a better preferred way to do it. The only negative drawback is you have to document what you're doing. So when you stop having that job and somebody else has that job, they can open up the batch file or the CMD file and read the lines you have remmed out of what the hell this thing's doing.
Right. And that does speak to the power of older solutions that are very stable. Gosh, that somewhat sideways reminds me of, did you read an article about a couple weeks ago about there's some school district that was looking to replace their computer that they use to run all of the temperature control within the entire school district. It was running on an old Amiga machine.
Oh yeah.
And they got quoted by some company that would be, I think it was in the neighborhood like $200,000 or $300,000 for an upgraded solution. And yet they can just order another one of these on eBay for like less than $200.
Yeah, well, the example I'll give to that, one of the solutions they've looked at replacing that I did, the last vendor that came in quoted them $22 million.
Jeez.
So let's just say haven't replaced that one yet.
I'll do it for 11. Okay, yeah. Five.
I know. Well, I'm not in those meetings. I don't want to be in those meetings. Mm-mm. I don't want to have anything about, you guys do whatever the hell you want to do. Okay, really quick, because we are going along here, which I know, we're podcasts. We go however long we want.
Till the wheels fall off.
Yeah. I had to bring this one up, and I'm really shocked I haven't heard anybody mention this whatsoever, even though I guarantee we might have seen this in a video or two on YouTube, one of those heart-bending things of, the child for the first time can pick up a Twinkie kind of thing.
Yes.
It's called Hackberry, I believe it's called Hackberry XE, I believe. Mm-hmm. EXIII.
Yeah.
And this is a Japan website, exiii.jp/hackberry.html. I don't know why it's called Hackberry. I can't tell if there is a Raspberry Pi embedded in this thing, but there's not a lot of room for it. This is a completely open hardware, open software prosthetic hand and arm. So hypothetically, Cody, in the next 2 years, you have a bad accident and you lose your arm from your elbow down.
Oh, well.
It's possible you could be having on the end of your elbow a Hackberry. This is unbelievably professional grade, unbelievably professional grade product that is completely open sourced, which means nobody can completely gamify this product and overcharge for it because anybody can sell it. It's just a question of getting the hardware together to make it. And because it's open source, that means you're going to have people all around the world who can make it better, make the software smarter.
Right.
And just improve upon it. This is like my theory on plugins and applications. Those applications always win because people can add to it. If there are research groups around who can help buy places this to quote unquote play with to improve, there's little doubt in my mind this will become a epic piece of hardware for a lot of people.
See, I don't know if you've seen the demo video on this, but they're doing some pretty complicated stuff when you're talking about being able to have independent control of the fingers and not just what we've seen in some of the 3D printed models where you kind of have a muscle activated, you know, full hand grip, you know what I mean?
Right.
But this is intricate, you know, thumb, index finger, thumb, pinky, thumb, you know, everything. And yeah, it definitely seems like the next evolution of this. And with this becoming more prevalent and more possible, because, well, let's face it, we're in the future now. Lexus has supposedly made an actual working hoverboard. So it's officially 2015, everybody. Congratulations. And then seeing stuff like this. But what I've seen a couple articles recently about kids being kids with missing appendages, whether it be the entire arm or arm from the elbow down or whatever. There's been a couple articles I've read recently where the children have said, "No, I'm fine the way I am. I don't want it."
Right.
Like they've been presented with an arm and they just refuse it. So I think that it's a very interesting time that we live in, and the fact that we can do things with technology. Things of that nature doesn't necessarily mean that we should be. But you look at something like that, and then I don't know if you've been following this news, but about the large, huge sort of combat robot made by a United States robotics team and then challenging Japan to a duel.
No.
You haven't seen this? Oh, my God. I'll have to find the links. I'll try to get them in this week's show notes, if not next week, but basically some U.S. robotics team made this huge battle mech and basically threw out a challenge to Japan on YouTube.
I did see like a still image of it. The thing looked huge. It looked like they didn't make it. It looked like they stole it off a Hollywood soundstage.
Right, but it's legit. It works. And that's then scary. Japan just 2 days ago accepted. Mm. But they basically mocked us saying, you know, you have a big robot with a lot of guns on it. That's very American of you.
Ooh.
Yeah. So when I see, you know, things like that and then things like this with, you know, and let's just call them, you know, robotic appendages, okay? Or we'll say alternative appendages. Technology making things possible. You know, makes me think of those late 80s, early 90s sci-fi films. Like, those are the next step. This is where we're at now. You know, like, was it last week? There was that guy that was killed at the Volkswagen factory.
Yeah.
By the machine.
And Sarah O'Connor tweeted it.
It just happened to be tweeted by Sarah O'Connor, and the internet went crazy. So, and then, what was it? Elon Musk is doing something. I can't remember exactly what it is, but trying to prevent the creation of a Skynet-like company and or artificial intelligence. So yeah, it's very interesting to be reading this stuff and just think like this is not fiction anymore. This is possible.
Well, yeah, and what I'll say is I did find the video at least of the response that Japan's giving.
It's awesome.
I compare this. Okay, we just recently here in America got BattleBots back. BattleBots is like Lego. It's like children playing with Legos from 20 years ago. It's entertaining. It's this is like the major league version of BattleBots, where this literally could turn into some kind of international sporting event, dare I say.
I am throwing a link into the show notes Speaking of awful 80s/early 90s sci-fi films, for those of you who haven't had the pleasure of seeing the sci-fi robotic battle epic Robot Jocks, spelled J-O-X, just press pause on this podcast. Go find it. You probably have to order a bootleg VHS copy off eBay, whatever it takes. Get it in your possession. Get some popcorn. Get a case of beer. Sit down. Watch that effing thing, and you'll be better for it. Because when you talk about, the cover to the new, so it's on DVD. You can find it on DVD. But the cover to this, to the remake DVD, is terrible. But man, it was quite an amazing film for its time. I will say that.
See, now, I would say, watching this American video, I keep thinking there's more that they're letting on. Like, there's somebody on both sides who said, I'm going to do this. And you guys, if you think you're good, we're going to challenge you. Don't tell us what you're doing. We're not going to tell you what we're doing, but bring it on.
Right. And I like you make the connection to BattleBots, because these aren't little, I think at the largest, you know, like maybe 3 or 4 foot, you know, square, wheel propelled bots to be battling the arena. We're talking mechs.
Exactly. This is close to being actual like mech warrior
mechs, right? And not to spoil anything, but in Robot Jocks, and trust me, this is not a spoiler, but in the future, basically all wars are settled with these robots, and all fights for territory, all fights for resources, everything. They're all done with these bots. So
why not?
And I mean, you think that, God, this film was 26 years ago now? Gosh, that makes me feel old, Dor.
We're old.
We are old.
The old movie poster said, two men, two machines, too wild.
Yeah, it's just it's a good time, but yeah, I mean it's here, man. It's totally here.
I'm not sure I saw this movie.
It was a B, if not a C grade movie. There was, you know, it was like that late night Cinemax before Emmanuel, and some of you are laughing really hard right now because you know exactly what I'm talking about. And I'm not going to go into any details about it, but yeah, for that laugh, you're welcome. But this is an action film that would have debuted or shown itself before, I don't know, maybe ending around 11:30. Wink. So, okay. on Cinemax.
When I just Google image search robot space jocks, J-O-X, the second image is of two guys giving each other like a thumbs up, but also like fist pounding what looks like RCA cables connecting to boxes on the back of their hands. I mean, this is just gold.
Yep. It was, yeah, man. Oh, if we only had more time, we should. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I could go on forever about films from this era with cameos of technology. We're like, oh, I wonder if they did that with this. Ooh, that's neat. Yeah, but maybe not. Like, okay, a quick aside. For instance, you know, the new Terminator Genesis just came out.
Mm-hmm.
But the film before that was Terminator Salvation, which was, I don't know, about four or five years ago now. But one of the big things in that was that there were these Terminator motorcycles. Right. That were, now when you think of that, I don't know what pops in your head, but they were literally
motorcycles.
Yes, yeah, sentient motorcycle, yeah, artificial intelligence, sentient, very, very, very good. But the thing, the one ridiculous thing was that John Connor and many folks in his squadron, whatever, had these, I believe they were Nokia, they almost looked like Nokia N900s on their wrists, right? But conveniently enough, these Terminator motorcycles happen to have USB ports on them.
Yep.
You know, just in case a human needed to interface with the device. And that's how he was able to hack into them and basically make one his own bike, which I thought was hilarious.
Isn't that a akin to building a giant space station with a critical flaw in it and then rebuilding the same space station with the same critical flaw? Isn't that kind of like akin to that?
Like in a certain, I don't know, exhaust port that happens to be wide open. at the end of a large corridor. Exactly. Who would do that? I mean, well, but it, to the defense of the engineers, you got to put the exhaust port somewhere. You just got to, because it's not a moon. It's just a large base station, and quite frankly, you know, there are things that during the operation that take place, and quite frankly, there's just some things that need to be expelled from said station, and it's got to go somewhere.
But of course. Final link here for this show. Thank you again to Martin Rambo Bando. If you do not follow Martin Rambo Bando, Martin Bubbles, if you will, on the Google Plus or on the Twitter, probably on Facebook too. If you don't follow him on any of these places, let me tell you something. You are missing some nuggets, and gold nuggets, my friend, not the other kind of nuggets. This was a text editor that I honestly, okay, first off, I saw a posting that made me want to strangle somebody. Top 10 alternatives to Notepad++ on Linux. Okay, first off, none of them all are alternatives because they don't stack up. That's like saying the top 10 alternatives to a supercar. You have a Pinto, you have a moped, you have your feet, you have a Segway. I mean, no, they're not the same thing. Notepad++ is a insanely powerful text editor with plug-in architecture. That's right. How do you get that? So it combines anything and everything that is good. And if it isn't there, somebody makes it, and then it rises to the top, and then bang, it's in the editor. This looks like it could be the next great text editor for one reason only, besides, of course, having a plug-in architecture that's completely built into the interface. The entire interface is basically HTML, JavaScript, CSS. So it's very easily editable by someone who wants to actually dig into the code. 2, it's put out by GitHub. Okay, it's called Atom. Atom 1.0 text editor for coders by GitHub is out. Now, we've had stuff like Sublime Text in the past, which, you know, does good for what it does, but they all have shortcomings. Just because this is GitHub backed, this has the promise of being adopted by huge metric tons of people. This is, to me, equivalent to almost Apple releasing Apple Music simultaneously on every iOS device. Okay, this is a text editor backed by GitHub. GitHub is the place to go for stuff.
Yeah, good find for Martin. Something that I hadn't checked out before the show, so I'll definitely have to give it a try. And with the importance of text editors, anything new that comes out that just makes it more streamlined and more user-friendly, I'm all for it.
Yeah, and I will say, on Ubuntu, very easy, .deb file, download, bang, you're done. It's installed, it's working. That, to me, is a big plus. It has deb packages, RPM packages, native installers for Windows and Mac OS. So it's completely cross-platform. In the interface, a lot is customizable. You can modify any key binding, create any key binding you want. You can create any command that goes with any key binding. And there's a very rich autocomplete feature. So almost it doesn't matter what coding language you're in. Using CoffeeScript, you can basically just type a couple keys, hit enter, and voila, your text will then expand out to complete functions that are native to whatever coding language that you're talking about. I wish I did coding after seeing this, because I haven't done really any coding for a couple years. And like I said earlier, all of my coding was essentially hacks, but I had fun doing it.
It's never too late, Dor. Get out of your own way and just make it happen, man.
Oh, no. The biggest problem about this is I have to find an itch to scratch. If I don't find an itch to scratch, what am I going to code?
Close your eyes.
Look really hard to code with my eyes closed.
Well, no, just trust me. Close your eyes, look slightly to the left, and then open them. Got it?
Okay.
Okay, now I'm sure somewhere on that desk and within your field of vision of whatever you're looking at right now, something can be benefited by some extra code skills. You're welcome. Bill's in the mail.
There's a pair of headphones over there. Oh, how am I going to code that?
Yeah, well, you just never know, man. You gotta get in the boat before you start rowing, man.
Yes.
All right. Fantastic. Well, a lot of good links this week, Dor. Thank you very much. And just as a quick reminder, if we want to get a hold of you as an audience, I mean, I know how to get a hold of you. I talk to you every day. But the person listening to the show, how should they get a hold of you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter is DoorToDoorGeek or PodNuts. You can find me on Facebook, Stephen McLaughlin or PodNuts. Google Plus, any of the PodNuts groups, or DoorToDoorGeek, DoorToDoorGeek. Or you can send emails. Just go to podnuts.com and there's a bunch of contact info.
Very well. Sounds good. And if you want to contact me, you can send me an email directly to Cody@podnuts.com. You can follow me on Twitter @CodyCooper or just look me up on Google Plus, Cody Cooper, and send me a message. If you want to send an email to the show, please send it to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. And we would like to hear an email from you. Hear a voicemail. I got Steve's cherubino-itis there. If you want to send in a voicemail, please send it to 707-6-PODNUT. That is 707-676-3688. Please keep your message under 60 seconds. If it goes a little long, that's fine. If it's 2-3 minutes long, hey, break it up, make it 2 messages. We'll listen to it, you know, and then address them individually. We do appreciate it. But thank you again to everybody who's been using the podnuts.com/Amazon/Newegg links and /eBay. We really do appreciate the support. Please continue to use those. And Door, it's good to be back. We've had a little tiny hiatus, but we're back in the saddle. We're here. We're displaying all the Linux things, and I'm very happy to be back. Well, so, yeah. Go ahead.
Oh yeah, that's a thing. I know you. You know me. People should know us. There is no pod fading because we would have said we're pod fading.
No.
Things came up. Things got busy. Mm-hmm. It's the summer. Some things just can't wait. Some things have to happen, and some appointments were made. So time got tight. The one thing I want to ask people, I haven't asked this for a while. I know you're out there. I see the stats. The stats we do are completely anonymous, but I know you're out there. The people who use an iPhone or iTunes to download this show, this is what I ask you people. If you listen to more than 10 podcasts, okay, once a month, look at your podcast list on the first of the month, let's say, look at your podcast list and think, which podcast have I gotten the most out of this month? And go write a review for that podcast. Reviews are like gold for podcasts on iTunes. It's the way, it's their credibility. Every time you put a review, it helps that podcaster. And I don't care if you never do a review for our show. Do a review for somebody. Hopefully it's a Linux show. It doesn't have to be, but go give reviews. Every time you give a review, you're sending out a flag to everybody else in iTunes that what you think is right here, quality content. And it's not easy for quality content to rise up in iTunes because you get a whole bunch of trolling celebrities insisting that their fans go out and pump their numbers up, and they're blatant about it. Go pump our numbers up because I'm important and I'm a celebrity. Go do it for the average podcaster. That's what I ask you people. I have iTunes. I try to put in at least a review every month and a half, 2 months. I've fallen behind, and I'm saying this partially as a reminder to myself. But if you use iTunes out there for any reason, and I have to add shows to iTunes, so I have iTunes, go leave shows reviews.
Very good bring up. Yeah, you would be amazed at how much those help, not just in the short term, but in the long run. So if you have the ability to do that, please do so. We would appreciate it. And thank you for the reminder, Door. All right. In closing, thank you very much for listening and supporting us. I hope you enjoyed this episode, but please do not forget that Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is for all of us. Good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.